Hello and welcome to the MBOM podcast, where you'll learn to master the business of yoga. MBOM is a proud part of the Wander Barn podcast network, and I'm your host, Amanda Kingsmith. I'm a 500-hour registered yoga teacher, a yoga business coach, and a total business geek. Here at MBOM, you'll learn everything you need to know to create a sustainable yoga business by learning from myself and guests from around the world about how they built their yoga businesses. And about how you too can become a successful yoga teacher, studio owner, and much more. All right, let's dive in. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Mastering the Business of Yoga. I am super excited that you're joining me for today's episode of the show. Today on the podcast, I am thrilled to be joined by Claudia Azula. Claudia is a yoga teacher, best-selling author, and a YouTuber. Claudia is passionate about the ways in which yoga helps with a lot more than just the body. And she was born in Buenos Aires and teaches yoga in both English and Spanish, but joined us today from New Jersey. And today on the podcast, we are talking all about Claudia's yoga journey, what inspired her to focus on teaching via YouTube and private classes, as well as her process for self-publishing her latest book, How to Have a Yoga Body. Claudia shares some of her top tips for anyone who's interested in teaching on YouTube or teaching private clients, as well as what she learned through writing her books and much more. So this episode is jam-packed with goodness, and I'm so excited for you guys to hear this episode. And before we dive in, I just wanted to give a little shout out to Offering Tree for sponsoring this episode. Offering Tree is my number one recommendation for all things yoga business for yoga teachers. You can do everything from your website to your email newsletter to scheduling classes, privates, courses, memberships, video on demand, and so much more. I'll tell you more about them and their offerings later on in the episode, so stay tuned for that. But if you want to go check them out and get a sweet little discount, head on over to offeringtree.com/MBOM. All right, without further ado, here is Claudia. Welcome to the show today, Claudia. I'm really excited to have you here with me.
Oh, thank you, Amanda. Super happy to be here.
Yeah, and can you tell me and listeners where you're joining us from today?
Yeah, I'm in New Jersey, in a little town called Rutherford, very quaint, very sweet, and happy to talk to you all the way into Mexico.
Yeah. It's always really cool to be able to connect with people who are, you know, so far away from me, different climate, different time zone, all those things. And so I'm really thrilled to have you here with me. And I wanted to start by just hearing a little bit about your yoga story, your background with yoga, all of that good stuff.
Yeah, sure. I found yoga in the early 2000s, and then I got very serious about it. I studied Ashtanga yoga. I went to India 3 times. I found the hardcore part of it very interesting. And then I also went to Thailand for pranayama studies, all of the breathing. I went there twice. I got a little bit of a further studies. And I've been everywhere. Like, I think we've all been every retreat possible. I have a big background, big training as a yogi, as a yoga teacher. And then there is the part of business, which you carry very well. I'm learning from you too. And so now I have private clients. I have a YouTube channel in English and one in Spanish. And I adore everything that has to do with yoga. I also recently self-published a book about yoga. So I'm very immersed in everything that has to do with my practice, private clients, and the business of yoga, which is sort of like a wholesome approach, I think, for most yoga teachers like you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And thanks for sharing that. I'm really excited to dive into your business and your book and all that stuff. But first, I'd love to hear a little bit about, you know, what inspired you to become a yoga teacher? Like, what was the catalyst for you being like, okay, you know, I love this practice. I want to take a teacher training, become a teacher.
Yeah, well, my story is actually a big no-no, probably. I got into yoga. Well, I liked it, but I also thought I could make money from it. Right. And since I loved it so much, I thought, well, I want to make a career out of it. And at the time when I got very serious about it in 2005, I found out about, well, Ashtanga yoga and how the sort of like the teachers that could bend the most. Now looking in retrospect, it wasn't the more sort of like meditation or enlightened teachers, but the ones that could bend the most and get into all of the pretzels positions, got to travel around the world teaching. And at the time I had an office job in New York, working under fluorescent lights, which is horrible. And so I noticed that perhaps there was a path for me. So it wasn't all money. I really loved yoga, but I wanted to make a living out of being a yogi, which sounds very unrealistic in a way. But I thought there would be a way. I have a very deep spiritual practice. I have a connection with a higher power of God or the universe. Different people call it different ways, different things. And I thought it will help me. If it's meant to happen, it will help me. So I loved the practice. I loved the traveling. I think we have that in common. I definitely loved going to India so many times and seeing the different culture, colors, and also the poverty, really, which was not so good. And then Thailand and then all over the United States, Canada. Sometimes I say yoga chose me because I had no idea. What happened in the year 2000, actually, is I was in a class at the Equinox gym. It was one of my first classes, and the teacher had us rest in Savasana, but he had us lay down face up with the legs open to the side as if it was cowboy pose. And so I did that, having no clue what we were doing. And all of a sudden, I started crying, and I couldn't understand why was it that the tears were falling down my cheeks. And the teacher saw me. And she gave me a moment, and then she addressed the whole class, and she said, crying in this position is normal because emotions, especially the negative ones, can be stored in the hips. And I had no idea that was a thing, that you could store emotional issues, trauma, things that happened in childhood in the body. I had never made the connection. And the intrigue just sparked my imagination. And all I wanted to do was learn more about it. And you know how it is at the beginning, it's confusing what teacher, what practice. So it took me a couple of years to find out what the type that really resonated with me. And so I practiced everything from Iyengar to Ashtanga to Vinyasa flow. I just tried to look for what worked. And finally, I found it, and I have a daily practice. I have to admit, sometimes I go to 4 times a week because with clients and business, it becomes very hard. But I do make it a point of meditation. And I say this, if you interrupt my meditation in the morning, I will show you my fangs. Like, I will not... I will not give up that, because ever since I started, I realized how different my life is when I start the day, even if it is a few minutes, sitting down in silence, meditating. So I do that, and I do a practice, which is pretty intense, and I love it, love it, love it. And then I start the day. So yoga is a very integral part of my day. I like it.
Yeah. That's amazing to hear. And I'm glad that, you know, even with a busy schedule, you're continuing to prioritize that. And so when you first started teaching, what did your career look like? Like you said, you got into it because you were like, hey, I can make money doing something I'm passionate about, which, I mean, isn't that what we all want to do, right? Is like do something that we love and make a sustainable income doing it. And I think it's totally possible in the yoga world. But I'm curious, like, did you start teaching group classes at studios? Did you start privates right away? Like, what did that look like for you?
Yeah, I agree that it's possible to make money out of doing yoga. I think there is definitely a way, especially now. And I don't see any contradiction between making money, good money, and being a yoga teacher anymore. I completely abandoned that stereotype. And when I started, I had a job. I was working as a secretary. So that sucked all the energy out of me. And it was difficult for me to teach, because when I teach, I want to give it my all. So what happened eventually, by 2009, I started a YouTube channel and I started teaching through YouTube. And then I did some workshops at Kripalu and some private workshops. And I worked at a studio recently, but I find that yoga studios are not, they're not doing so well. So, and in terms of bringing my own audience or people that are my following to practice in my studio or where I'm teaching, is difficult because they're not all in New Jersey, everywhere in the world. So I've settled on practice teaching private students in my area, which I'm so lucky to have, and I'm working on YouTube. Those are my two. I have my goals for 2023. And when it comes to work, I have two focus. And one is YouTube, the channel, and the other one is private clients. And the private clients, Amanda, have given me the most satisfaction. And you probably experienced this. Noticing how they change, how their body starts responding, how every class there is a difference, how they want to challenge themselves and try that pose again and again. It gives me so much satisfaction to see, observe the change that I can do, the service that I can do to people. And that just fascinates me. So that's what I'm going to focus on. I do believe that that yoga is better when it's taught one-on-one, because what I've experienced many times in classes around here, I do take classes around the neighborhood and they're great. I love Vinyasa Flow. I love them. And at the same time, I find them to be a bit fast, I would say, sometimes feeling like a dance routine. I have no problem with that. I like it because I have an extensive practice. But sometimes I find for people who are beginning or people who are 50 plus, which is my age range, I'm about to turn 55 years old, that there is a need for more attention. And when I have a one-on-one student, my whole attention goes into their body and it's magical what happens. I love that. And I find that for people who want to start, it could be a good idea to find a private teacher, at least in the beginning, to get the fundamentals right and to gain confidence, to see that, yes, it's possible, and lose the fear that many people have when they're starting yoga, which is completely natural. Yeah. So that's what I'm doing now, and that's my only focus. It's just too much to focus on more things. A channel is an enormous amount of work. And private clients demand a lot of energy. So yes, that's what I'm not like you. I wish I was having three podcasts, teaching courses, having one-on-ones. My energy is a lot more limited, maybe because of age, although I don't think so. Perhaps the whole thing of creating videos without having help yet is very demanding.
Yeah, for sure. I actually really like looking at, you know, our human designs and stuff like that. I feel like that's one thing that's helped me a lot. And I'm a manifesting generator, which is the type of person who likes to have their hands in multiple pots. So that's kind of where my like multi-passionate, I guess, drive comes from. But don't be deceived. I have a small infant, so I'm not working very much at the moment.
Well, you have a big job at the moment. I mean, motherhood is no joke. So I think that's a very respect.
yeah, definitely. I have a lot of help for the things that are being done with the business, which I'm very grateful for. But yeah, I think that it's really important, just with you bringing that up, it's really important for people to remember that, you know, what works for one person doesn't necessarily work for another person. And we do have to do, you know, our own personal energy management. I think that that's something that's, you know, super important, because again, we don't get into this career to burn ourselves out. And I think that it is the type of career where it can, you can burn out on it, right? Because it's physically demanding, it's emotionally demanding, it's energetically very demanding. And I remember when I started teaching, I was like, okay, well, I'll need to teach, you know, 20, 25 classes a week to make a sustainable income. No problem. I can easily work, you know, 25 hours a week. And then I realized what it would actually take to teach that many classes. And I was like, oh, dang, like, I do not have the capacity for that. I need to figure out some other stuff, which is really how my business and the podcast was born. But, you know, I think you're bringing up a good point with this, where it's like, you need to figure out what works for you. And I love that you've been able to narrow it down to like making videos on YouTube is great and focusing on your private clients.
Yeah. Yeah. The amount of work that goes into teaching a yoga class is very underappreciated. The fact that we have to be mentally looking at a person in every area, like their anatomy, their musculature, their state of mind, and then direct, sort of verbalize, not just positions, but the energy of each pose to create the gesture of the pose, the yantra. So it's not just the pose, but finding the lock within the pose that will gather the energy of each pose. That's a lot to transmit for an hour and a half. Yeah, it's intense. So I understand how, I don't think I could do 20 classes a week. There's no way. It's too demanding, but it's lovely. But I think in order for me to give, to be of service, I also need to do need to have a very high level of self-care, which for me is a priority. I make sure that I don't, they call it halt, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. I avoid those like the plague. I know that I need to keep myself in a very good place as much as possible, because otherwise we get burnt. It just happens. Yeah.
All right, friends, we're just taking a quick break from the podcast to talk a little bit about Offering Tree. You guys have heard me talk about Offering Tree so much on the show, and that's because I truly love their business. And one of the things that I really love about Offering Tree for yoga teachers is that you can scale your business. You can create engaging digital content, video libraries, courses, challenges, and coaching programs that can meet your clients and students anywhere at any time. You can also plug seamlessly into your membership and packages to offer added value to your loyal clients. At any point, you can go from just offering classes to also offering courses, coaching, one-on-one privates, memberships, and so much more. And all of that is easy to do in one place. You don't have to look for other software, you don't have to pay other pricing plans, and so much more. Plus, with templates and integrated website features, it's super easy to get everything you need for all of this stuff up and running and launched before you know it. So now when you have an idea for a new program or a new workshop or something like starting a membership, you can just make it happen with their services. So if this sounds interesting to you, head on over to offeringtree.com/MBOM. You can do a free trial here or get a discount for listening to the show. Once again, offeringtree.com/MBOM. All right, now back to the episode.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I completely agree. My list is very similar to you as well with my non-negotiables. And I'm curious just in terms of, you know, with running a YouTube channel and having private clients, do you have any, you know, tips or recommendations or any lessons that you've learned that you could share with listeners today about that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love YouTube. I love the medium of video because I find it to be the most complete. And if anyone was starting a YouTube channel for yoga today, or if I was starting it again, I wouldn't hesitate, which is actually the way I started because I had no idea what I was doing in 2009. So I would just do things and post and do things and post and try this and try that and find out what it is that the audience likes. Because it's important to figure out not only who they are and what they want, what keeps them up at night, what is it that they need, what do they want, dreams, expectations, but also find out things like what age group I am targeting and also what do I need to learn in order to do those things? So, for example, just to give you an idea, I started a very long time ago, but I had a period during which I couldn't teach on YouTube for personal reasons. So I recently came back and I was doing classes, and my classes are of good quality because I have an extensive training, and I had to learn things like how do you use a microphone, how do you put the camera, how do you do the lights. And the more I do, the more I understand what it is that I need to go look for. And okay, I need to learn this, I need to learn that. And then the practice taught me to find out who my audience is. And little by little, I have been figuring out that the people who watch me are basically me. They're 50 plus, between 45 years old and 65 years old. They want to stay healthy. They want to not sort of lose their minds with diseases that can be avoided. They wanna stretch. They wanna look good. They want to have a body that's limber and not overweight. And that's what they want, which is the same thing I want. And in that sense, it's easier for me to communicate with them. However, I will tell you that I started teaching classes, which I like. I find impressive and important. But people weren't watching them. There's just no very little views. So I would make a 10-day sequence, and then I would get 100 views, 200, 500 maximum. And it's frustrating. So with YouTube, it's a marathon. And I started, right now, I stopped. I'm not one of those people who will make a video and say, I'm leaving YouTube. That's kind of a cliche. But I did write in my community tab on YouTube that I'm taking a step back, because I was creating 2 videos a week and editing, which I love doing, and then nothing was happening. I wasn't getting a response that told me that people were enjoying. I wasn't being of service. And so what I'm doing now is I've taken a step back, consider more of what my audience wants and how I can be of service. And I've also learned a lot about making videos, which I love, Amanda. I love making the right frames, the right light, going outside. And I'm going to start doing videos more like benefits of yoga, or 50 plus 30 minutes, but very sort of customized to a person. And then make another video about why it is important to do this and start telling stories. I find that YouTube is very specific to every yoga teacher. And what people come to see is not the classes, is you. So if I have a channel, people will like me more even than the content too, but they come because of me and the personality, and they like that. So I think for any yoga teacher starting, I would try to learn how to be myself in camera, which is super difficult, and have a sense of humor. It's very important for YouTube. And then see what works for each teacher. There are some teachers that put a yoga class and they have 100,000 views right away. And that's wonderful, but it may not be for every person. It's important, I think, to find what works for you individually, and then also learn or have help when it comes to editing and do a good job with the presentation of it. So the YouTube is a whole new world. I can give seminars on it because I love it so much. But it's a question of trial and error. It is just like yoga. When you're approaching a new pose, for me, there are some that are super difficult. For example, from standing, dropping back to the floor, dropping back onto a back bend. I can't do that. I can't. I tried. I went all over the world. I have teachers tell me that the anatomy is fine. I can definitely do it. But I have a terror inside of me and I faint and I just can't do it. So it's important to identify these things that are scary and negotiate them. Negotiate with fear, especially in trying and knowing that it might not work out. and being okay with that. So it's a whole new world. And I love it, really. That's why I'm focusing just on YouTube and on the private clients. I also wrote a book, but I found out I don't like to write.
I want to talk about your book too, but can we talk about the private stuff before we get there? Because you shared so much good stuff around YouTube. And yeah, thank you for all of that information, Claudia. But I'm curious if you have, you know, any tips or pieces of advice for people who are like, you know, I totally agree with you. I love working one-on-one with people, but like, how do I actually find clients? You know, how do I do all of that?
Yeah. One thing I did is there's a website called Nextdoor. I'm not sure it's in Mexico, but it's definitely all over the United States. And there may be something similar. So when I had the opportunity to teach a free yoga class at the local studio, I made a little video and it wasn't anything fancy. I just put the camera in front and I said, please come on over. I was just very friendly. That's the key. I was like, you guys, I'm dying to meet you. This class is for every level. It is free. It's for the community. And by the way, my name is Claudia. Kind of like putting me in the middle, not at the front and saying, hey, I'm Claudia and I have yours. No, like putting them and then promoting that is one way to find private clients, because then the whole community can see me. The same thing for Facebook groups. There's one for Rutherford here that has 2,000 people and they allow me to put a video once a month. So that's another way. And then for my private clients, I ask for referrals, which I also put on Facebook and Instagram. And it's a question of, I wouldn't say hassle. I don't like that word. I prefer to surrender to the universe, but that doesn't mean that I'm not going to do the work. So I have a support group of people around how to make money and about the sales process, and then to keep learning the newsletter. Even if there is three people in a newsletter for somebody starting, it doesn't matter. That's my ministry. I have a bigger newsletter than that, but there are about, I think there are 1,500 people. And for me, they are my ministry. They are the people that I can be of service to. So as long as I'm thinking that and getting tips on how to go about showing myself, I need to be visible. So that's what I do with little videos. And I don't want to pay for advertising, but the community is the key thing, because I also don't want to teach via Zoom as much as possible, although it works. I want to teach in my area. I love either having people come to my house or going to their houses, because it's intimate and they're local. Otherwise, they may be able to reach me via Zoom, but I haven't done that yet. I hear for other people it works. For me, it sounds a little strange. I prefer to see the body, to have it next to me. And I'm talking very sort of as if I'm detached from the person. I'm not. But there is a part of me as a yoga teacher that has to just look at the body and focus on what's happening there. And there's nothing like having just one person in the room for that. One of my clients, I realized I was doing way too much. And this person didn't even know how to tell me. It wasn't out of control, but it wasn't something that was it was something that was a little too much. And eventually we found a rhythm that works exactly for this person. Whereas when I'm teaching a class, I have to adjust to every level, especially when I do an open one. And then people are left behind, or the people who are more advanced get bored. I find that very difficult. So that's how I go promoting myself. And I'm about to do another one, another little video, and talk about this. I think it's an important conversation to have. This is how yoga was taught way, way, way back in the times of Krishnamacharya, who was the teacher of Iyengar, and Pattabhi Jois, who unfortunately both of them have been disgraced due to abuse and all of that, which is unfortunate. But when they were studying one-on-one, or they had a very specific group of people that they were kids practicing in a palace, on a wing of a palace. And so they were all the same age and they could be pushed to the limit. But anything like pranayama or intense yoga is always better one-on-one. That's not to say studios are not good. They're great. And some of the practices that offer beginners levels are good. And I like it, especially if there is a few people. If the more intimate, the better, for a better foundation, I would say. So yes, in short, I promote myself via anything that is local, and I'll do it in video because I think when people see your face, it's the same thing with YouTube. They don't buy into the teaching, some, or they do, but mostly they buy into me, into the personality and what they see. And that is closer, it's a better approximation to what they're going to get. And I find that's better service for them, how to help better.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for sharing all of that. I'm definitely in alignment with that. I think there's a lot of benefits from being able to work one-on-one with somebody, you know, for all the reasons that you mentioned. And it's, you know, really great as a yoga teacher, as a pranayama teacher, a meditation teacher, to be able to have that focus one-on-one with people, because then you can really serve their needs versus in a group class. It's like, you're creating a sequence to the best of your ability, trying to kind of reach, you know, the middle ground with people. And, you know, obviously not everyone's going to like it. It's not going to serve everyone. So there's definitely complicated situations with that. But yeah, appreciate you sharing that and sharing how you find your clients and whatnot. And I know you mentioned before you have a book, it's called How to Have a Yoga Body. And I'm really curious about this book, you know, how it came to fruition. And then maybe you can tell us more about this discovery process of you finding out that you actually don't like to write.
I don't. Yeah, I don't. I mean, I love yoga and I can talk about it, but I don't think I'm going to write another one. But I do think that is the equivalent of a business card to have a book. I actually self-publish, which is another topic your audience may be interested in. There is no need to be rejected by publishers anymore. It is perfectly possible to make a book that looks good and feels good on, well, I did it on my own by hiring some people and making an investment. But, oh, I'm sorry. But when it comes to my book, the thing that I had an interest on is that in yoga, we talk a lot about the body and the breath and some meditation, but there is no talk whatsoever about what to do when I am extremely angry. I see red, I want to murder someone. I mean, I don't want to murder, but you know what I mean, that murderous rage that takes over, or when I am paralyzed by fear and there's nothing I can do. There are those moments where the emotions run rampant, and there's no yoga that can get me out of that. If I am in what Eckhart Tolle calls the pain body, where I am angry beyond belief, and it's a little bit as if the Hulk took over and there's nothing, don't even tell me I'm angry or don't even tell me to calm down, because I, you know, it's that level. There's nothing within yoga that I found that talks about these. And so based on the five kleshas and the, I found out these five levels of getting into the body, starting with the physical, of course. And that's the first chapter, which is the physical body. And I'm offering it free to any of your listeners if you want to send it through your newsletter or in any way. And so I find that yoga is not so much a process of getting things, but rather letting go, so that the gem that we are can shine through. So the first cleansing happens through the body, the sweating, the practices, getting the body to be healthy, luminous, shining, everything that yoga brings, which is lovely. I get into some stretches that I love. And so all of that. Then there is the proper breathing. And I would argue pranayama is great, but for an average sort of student or person, they may not need to do all the retentions, try to retain the breath for a minute. But there is definitely a need to learn how to breathe efficiently, because like, say, we get scared and the breath goes, right? So all of these things curtail the ability of the breath, and learning to breathe better, which I do on the mat with the Ujjayi breath or with pranayama, practicing the good breath is obviously good. And also knowing that the right nostril affects the left brain and all of these things that are very beautiful. But then I go into the emotional yoga body, which touches, in my experience, the third and the fourth chakra. So I don't think the chakras are real. I think they're a metaphor. So when we get to the emotional body, that's the Manipura chakra, which is the third. And that's the chakra that gets us out in the world to do things and to get the money and to, and it's good. But if I try to control everything, if I try to tell people what to do, if I start creating drama because I'm full of anger and fear, that same fire, which is the element of the emotional yoga body, can turn into addiction. It can turn into compulsivity. It can turn into denial. And so it can go either way. And I think as a yogi, I need to harness the power of my anger and my fear and process it so that it can be melted and elevated into the heart chakra. And both of those belong to the fire element and the emotional yoga body. So I'll give you an example. When I learned about how to do this, I was very angry. There are things in my life, especially trauma coming from childhood and people that I perceive as abusers. And I was raging underneath it all, filled with anger. And I needed to work those emotions via therapy, support groups. And so what I started doing was what they call an inventory, which is looking at, say I'm angry at you, right? I'm not, but say, suppose I was. Then...
Hopefully I haven't made you angry so far on this call. But yes. Suppose we were angry at me.
Suppose there was a world in which you said something and I was really angry at you. So instead of thinking, oh, she's this or that, I turn it around and I say, why am I so angry about what this person did? That because it's always about me. Another person can do whatever they want to do. And it doesn't mean I'm going to let them run over me, but first I need to look at why is this upsetting me so much? Why? And I will always find that it's touching, it's resonating with a place in my childhood where I felt that way. So I'll give you an example. Recently, I had an issue with a friend of mine who, whenever I went to her house, she would helicopter around me, telling me how to make the tea, how to things like that, how to clean the dishes, how to, it was too much for me. And I started feeling like I was, like she was trying to control me. And I got angry. I was like, you know, why is this person being so controlling? And, but because I know about the emotional yoga body, I started calling people in my support group to try to figure out why is this bothering me so much? So instead of going to my girlfriend or to a partner in a relationship or to a teacher or a coworker, instead of lashing out, I have a moment, an opportunity to see. And what that was triggering was my childhood in which I was walking in shells. Anything I did could be perceived in a wrong way, and I could, you know, there would be bad consequences. I don't want to talk too much about that because, you know, trauma is very specific. It can trigger people. But once I know what's happening with me, then I have a level of peace that allows me to talk to this person from a place of kindness rather than lashing out. And so that's what happened to me. When I was practicing all of these inventories, I was able to channel that fire of anger into my heart. And so one day I was with a group of people and we were sharing about things. How are you feeling today? How are you feeling? And I said to these friends that I wanted to say two things. I wanted to say something I was grateful for, and I wanted to say something that I wanted as a prayer. So I said that I was grateful for my family, friends, and all the good that was in my life, especially considering the pandemic, that it wasn't hard on me and my family. I know it was for many people, and I really feel for them. So that was what I was grateful for. And then it came the time to say one thing that I want. And when that moment came, something very strange happened. I looked around the room and I saw how these people looked at me with love. And it just sort of came out of me. I said, I feel loved. What else is there to want? And it was this moment where I feel my heart cracked open. I felt that ACNA, heart center, fourth chakra, whatever we want to call it, it felt like all this fire, by looking at it, had been transformed into love. And I think that's the beauty of dealing with the emotional yoga body, which is pretty overseen, like not addressed in yoga. And what that does is that it brings us to the wisdom yoga body, which is my fourth chapter. And the reason why that one is important is because when the emotions are clear and we can access the fifth chakra in the throat, the one of expression, then we can reveal what our purpose is. And I think since we're all here, we all probably want to teach yoga and have the business of yoga. However, the way in which that is going to take an expression, whether it be YouTube videos, private classes, funnels, books, that way is very specific to each one of us. And it needs to be felt, because then we transmit it to other people. This feeling of knowing what we're doing, knowing that we're on purpose, is what will light up other people and attract them to us. So that was my thing with the book. And then eventually the spiritual yoga body, the fifth one, which is just joy, the joy that comes from knowing we love what we're doing, knowing we're being of service, and just having it, dare I say, happiness, which is what I experience. So even though the book was a pain in the neck to write, I'm very happy with the result, because it talks about all of these things which I find are missing in the conversation of yoga. And I also did YouTube videos and photographs. That was a lot of fun. If you ever want to talk about self-publishing a book, I have to say that part is fun. The writing is the painful part.
Hi, friends. We are taking a break from the podcast so I can tell you about a software that I have recently discovered that I am super stoked about. It is called Coach Pals. Coach Pals is a wellness professional network. Their advanced search engine allows you not only to find, connect, and collaborate with like-minded individuals, but will also match your professional identity to the needs of hundreds of users around the world who are looking for your services or products. Coach Pals profiles are exclusively designed for wellness professionals. Users will automatically be able to access all the important data to set their confidence. From your biography, skills, experiences, and certifications to your website, social media, podcast, contacts in your network, testimonials, skills, endorsements, and so much more. So how does it work? You go, you sign up for an account, you create a profile. On mine, you can see things like my yoga teacher trainings, my business degree, my podcast, and then I can tell you a little bit about what I offer. If you're interested in that, you can click on the links or you can connect with me and we can become a part of each other's networks. It's pretty cool, and I think it's a really awesome opportunity for us wellness professionals to get to know each other in an environment that is not social media, where we have so many inputs and so many distractions. So if you're interested in checking this out, head on over to coachpals.com. You can create a profile for free. You can get a feel for their platform. And if you like it, use MBOM Pals to get 3 months off completely free for the professional membership. Once again, that's coachpals.com, and use the code MBOM Pals to get 3 months off the professional membership. I would love to see you there. All right, back to the episode.
That's so funny. I feel like there's probably a lot of people that might say the opposite, but you know, to each our own, right? And yeah, thanks for sharing all of that. We'll make sure there's a link for the book and stuff like that. But I just love that you're, you know, kind of talking about this on a deeper level, because I think that this was one of the things that I feel like for me with yoga, it's like I came to it because I wanted to, I guess, like exercise, workout, sweat, but do it in a way that wasn't necessarily just like going to the gym and lifting weights. But I feel like I kept coming back for all the things that you just mentioned, you know, like being able to get all that stuff. But until I did teacher training, I really didn't have words or explanation for any of that. So I think it's really amazing that you've been able to put this into a book where it can be accessible to people who
you know, from all over the world and of all backgrounds who can kind of dive into it a bit deeper.
I did listen to a few of your podcasts, and I heard it as a recurring theme, the issue of dealing with anger. So I know I'm not the only one. I know you are sort of like a leader in this direction of getting real about our feelings and bringing in people who can talk about these so that we can clear the way for our own business of yoga. So I'm actually in awe at your podcast for that reason, for bringing it forward.
Ah, well, thank you. I appreciate that. But yeah, no, I feel like it comes from, you know, my own experiences. And then, yeah, I think you're right. So many people have had these experiences of, like I said, coming for the physical and then, you know, staying for the other stuff. And yeah, I guess we can't dive too deep into self-publishing in this episode, but maybe we can talk about a part two down the line. But I'd love to hear just a little bit of, like, you know, what that process was like, what you learned through it, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. This is not my first book. I self-published before, and I also published through a traditional house, Hay House. So I have the benefit of knowing both worlds. And here's the thing with going through a traditional publisher. So if anyone is thinking about that, first of all, there's going to be a lot of rejection. The book has to be kind of already written, and there's going to be rejection, because for anyone, especially a first-time author, that will be hard. Then if there is an acceptance, then the advances nowadays are luckily maybe $5,000. That is what I had for the Hay House book. 5,000. So they're not very substantial considering all the writing. The writing process is intense. It's writing every day, editing, re-editing, re-editing. So it takes a lot of time. When it comes to the publishing and the promotional part of writing a book, I thought that the major house would help me with that. But the reality was that we would have meetings and they would ask me, how many followers do you have on Facebook, on Twitter, on this, on that? And what can you do for us as a publisher house? So all of the marketing was heavy lifting. I had to find other venues, other newsletters. That book actually hit the Wall Street Journal bestseller list, which was amazing. But that was all me. It wasn't the publisher so much. They did put a few presentations on their Facebook page about the book, but they didn't really do that much for sales. So I find that when there is a clear message and there is the desire to write, which I know a lot of people have, I know a lot of yoga teachers, because of their patience, are able to do very well. And so many yoga teachers have an amazing message to carry. What I did was, well, first I wrote the book, right? That's the hard part. But then I hired freelancer.com and I hired a designer for the cover. And then I hired an interior designer, and I did it myself carefully with help from other people. I love my cover. I love the interior designer, and even the writing I love now. The ISBN, which is an issue a lot of people ask me about, that is not necessary. Amazon will give you one for free. So there is no reason to pay $150 for the ISBN, which is the book identifier. Now, there are issues with it. And anyone who is for a publisher will say, oh, but you don't appear in bookstores, or you don't get to be in the Library of Congress. But frankly, I've never been to the Library of Congress to get a yoga room book. So I'm not sure that's necessary. And also the Barnes & Nobles issue, or being in bookstores. I've been to a Barnes & Nobles when I was doing this book, because I was doing research for a video. And for yoga, there wasn't even a whole stand. There were two shelves within a stand, and there were about maybe 50 yoga books. So the bookstore is really not that necessary when we have an online presence, a mailing list, and so on and so forth. Also, for a publisher to put my book on a bookstore, they have to pay. So if you enter Barnes & Nobles and you see that table where they have all of these books, mostly romance novels, those are paid to be on the front. And then when you go to the back, depending on where your book is, just showing the spine or showing the cover, that is also a different price. So for publishers to get a book onto brick and mortar stores, they need to make sure they're going to get the return on investment. So that's why they will get someone very famous. But when I went to Barnes & Noble, not even a famous yoga teacher was there, other than Iyengar, Light on Yoga, you know, which is in every bookstore in the country, which is great. There weren't so many. And then I did the audiobook. And for that, I hired a studio in New York because, I mean, forget about recording it in a closet. That will just not work. So it was wonderful to have them guiding and editing and doing the right sound. And once those things are there, uploading to Amazon and uploading to Audible is just like publishing on Medium or publishing on the website. It's just uploading the files. Now, I'll tell you what it cost me, because that's important, too. And in doing the numbers, it came out to $4,700. So it is quite a bit of money. But the book being done and being able to gift it or talk about it, and mostly presenting our message, what needs to be heard to the world, for me, it was worth it to invest that money on it. So there is a lot to talk about books, and maybe your audience has questions. I will be happy to respond. If I don't know if there are comments in podcasts, but it's a big topic, and I find this necessary for all of us to express ourselves. There is so much wisdom in yoga teachers. So that was the book. That's how I made it.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. That's really amazing. And I'm curious where people can go to find your books.
Amazon. They're all on Amazon, but I used to have a different last name because I was married. So I was Claudia Azula, and then another last name, Altucher. But my last book, How to Have a Yoga Body, is under my name, Claudia Azula. So it's there. And that's where they are, all of them. And also on Audible. And the funny thing is, Audible used to be very expensive. And now my book on audio is actually cheaper than Kindle, which is incredible. So they're all there. And I also have a free copy of the first chapter under claudiayoga.com/yogabody or yogabody book. I think those two have one has the first chapter and the other one has the exercises of the book with the pictures and everything. So if you want to check out what a book is like and get an idea of what you can do, check that out. You don't even have to buy it, but it's good inspiration to get your own message across.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much for giving us that. And I'll make sure there's links for that. And I'm curious, is there anything else you want to share with listeners today, Claudia? Any final tips, business lessons, thoughts, anything like that before we wrap up?
Yes. I think there is one thing I would like to share. And that is, I find every talk I give a lot of talks in support groups. The main issue that comes up is how to get out of anger, fear. There's a lot of things that no one talks about. I enjoy those, like romantic obsession, fantasy about men, trying to control another person. And there's a lot of stigma in talking about these things, especially things like fantasy and romantic obsession. No one wants to talk about those things, and they're rampant. So I think the inventories, the noticing how they are coming from fear. They come from a fear that I cannot give myself what I need. Or anger comes from the fear that I'm not good enough. And so I think it's important to, in the case of fear, what I recommend that helps me a lot is to free write, as in a journal, which I do, things I'm scared of. So I'll give you an example. I am afraid of growing old. I am afraid of looking old. I am afraid of getting fat. I am afraid of being lonely. I am afraid of dying in agony. These are very valid fears. And I think, especially as a woman, I've been trained not to accept that I have fears and that I am angry, but just writing them down in a stream of conscious, everything that I'm scared of relieves the fear and allows me to clear my mind so that I can start doing what I love. And when it comes to anger, the same thing, writing it down. What is it that I'm angry at? Why? What did they do? Why is it hurting me so much? And I think that's important thing. There's a lot of pain. So what is the pain? Who hurt me? Why am I so in pain? And recognize that and accept that and connect with the little girl within me and tell her, I know you're afraid. I know you're angry, but I'm here to protect you now and no one is going to hurt you. And from there, grow a spiritual muscle that deals with emotions and deals with fear so that the heart can open and we can be of service.
Amazing. That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that, Claudia. And thank you for everything that you've shared in this episode. It's been such a treat to talk with you. And yeah, just thank you for this amazing conversation.
Thank you. Yeah, much appreciated talking with you, Amanda. I'm a big fan.
Thanks so much. All right, friends, I hope that you enjoyed that episode of the podcast with Claudia Azula. I know that I just really loved diving into all things yoga and the different layers of yoga and how it impacts us, and just feel really connected to her philosophies on that, as well as the way in which she's used that to build her business. So make sure you guys go check her out. Make sure you get that first free chapter of her book. I'm just starting to dive into it and really enjoying it so far. So make sure you guys go check it out. And of course, a huge thank you to Offering Tree for sponsoring this episode. You guys go check them out, offeringtree.com/MBO. And of course, thank you to you, the listener of the show. I'm so grateful that you are here listening to the podcast. I know you have a lot of different options these days, so thank you so much for being here. I couldn't do without you. All right, now we're wrapping up this episode and we'll be back next week for the last episode of 2022. So stay tuned for that. All right, bye for now. Thank you so much for tuning in for this episode of the podcast. To find links, notes, resources, and everything mentioned in today and all episodes of the show, you can head on over to mbomyoga.com. You can find the podcast and myself on Facebook and social media at Mastering the Business of Yoga. And I would love for you to join the private Facebook community, Yoga Business Badasses. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, please make sure you reach out to me at info@mbomyoga.com. And last of all, if you enjoyed this episode of the show, please make sure you hit subscribe and leave a review for the podcast. It would mean the world. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next week. Namaste.